people say I ain't no good, and I'm crazy as a loon. Cause I shave my head in the morning and pick guitar in the afternoon. Just like old Chief and Charlie, I like to lay around in the shade. Well, I ain't got no money, but you better believe I got it made. Cause I ain't asking nobody for nothing if I can't get it on my own. Just leave this bald-headed country boy alone.
Before this episode of the Josh Terry Podcast gets started, we want to thank all of our sponsors. 3B Construction and Roofing, Your Choice Healthcare, Lori's Dive-In, DPF Alternatives, and they have a new address, by the way. It is 288 Edington Highway, Gray, Georgia, 31032. Nobles Networking, Project K9 Hero, who is a lifetime sponsor of the show. If you would like to figure out how to be a lifetime sponsor of the show, please message me now. Cottonfield Grill, Pearl Promoting, Back Road Park and Event Venue. Don't forget November 10th and 11th. We are over there for their Veterans Day celebration. Friday night is Tristan Baugh and Confederate Railroad. And on Saturday is Miss Ella Langley and Trey Lewis. I will be hosting the event. It is going to be an awesome time. Do not miss out. Tickets are available now. Cashman's Pub, Down Yonder Hat Co., Deep South Chemical, and we're bringing back an old feature that we haven't done in a while. Our Spotlight Song of the Month, an artist spotlight, is on Mr. Hunter Mounts and Kyle Austin. They just put out a song called Collard Greens. I really, really like it. I'm going to play it for you in a couple weeks whenever these boys come into the show. So do me a favor now. Go follow both these guys on social media and download our Song of the Month, Collard Greens, by Hunter Mounts and Kyle Austin. Better Than Basic. Miss Erica does our website. She does all our graphic design. She does everything for us. Please go check them out now for any of your social media needs, marketing needs, whatever. And check out the Josh Terry Podcast.com, our official website. Grab some merch while you're there. And please leave a review and rate the show if you love this. Please help me grow. All I need you to do is take 5 minutes out of your time, go to Apple, Spotify, however you listen to the show, and leave a review. Leave us 5 stars. It helps us more than you know. I'm grateful for each and every one of y'all. Thank y'all for making the show what it is. Now, I'll stop with the business side of the show now, and we'll get to talking. Thank y'all for listening. Enjoy the show. What's up, folks? Thank y'all for tuning into the Josh Terry Podcast. After a wild weekend in Angel City bike rally, I'm exhausted, but I am up for this show. I've been wanting to do this show for a hot ass minute. I'm going to tell y'all a cool story about it in a minute, but first I'm going to introduce y'all to Mr. LV Shane. What's up, dude?
What's going on, dude? Good to be here. Sorry for the delay.
Everything in my life's a fucking delay. You're fine. Like I can't get shit right most of the time.
I didn't become a musician to be on time for everything, right?
Thank you. Same with all the shit I do. Like, when I show up, I show up. Like, thank y'all just for having your shit together when I get there, you know? Like, one of us needs to. What's crazy, dude, is I opened up my studio in 2020. And my dad has this big monster of a man for a friend. I'm not going to say his name on here. But he is just a big mountain of a son of a bitch. And we're in the studio and I'm playing all the shit I normally play. Like, I'm a Keith Whitley's my all-time favorite, Paycheck, Co., all that shit. And I'm in there listening to it. And this big old burly son of a bitch comes up to me and he's like, dude, you got to hear this song. It's called That's My Boy by LV Shane. And I hadn't heard it yet, right? And he's like, look it up real fast. And I played on YouTube and all the shit and everything. There's 6 or 7 grown ass men in the studio helping me put the finishes touches on everything. And this son of a bitch I've known my whole life. I'm 36 years old. And so he's got to be in his 50s, 60s, is over there squalling. And like, I love the song, but I look at him and I'm like, Why? I mean, like, I've seen you listen to fucking Teddy Bear by Red Sivan and not cry. I've seen you listen to the saddest songs of all time and not cry. And he's like, I lived this, dude. He's like, my son, who's not my son, is my son. And he's like, this dude just put it better than I've ever heard it before. And I mean, I was hooked on the song after that, but it's crazy to see this, how that song affected him. And then when you saw the reaction to it on social media and everything, that's one of those I always preach on here, dude. I'm not really about the in the moment songs or just making shit for money. I like the legacy of songs. I like songs that are going to be all time songs. That is going to be an all time song, dude.
Well, hopefully that's what I continue to focus on trying to put out in the world, man. I'm not about the here and now shit myself, you know. Hey, but that seriously helped me. People like Burley Bob you're talking about, that song is so much different than anything else that I do, and especially on this new project we're putting together. But it's so much softer and tender and vulnerable and, you know, all the above. But I was worried about putting it out because I was like, man, that's gonna be such a hill to have to climb after that to let people get more of an idea of like where I come from, about. And dude, I was right. It's a hill right now. We're climbing it, but at this point, I don't give a shit. It was an honest song. It comes from where I come from. It's about my son, who I just try to be the best dad or father figure I can. And it's like I come nowhere close to my father-in-law being a great father figure in that boy's life. My father-in-law was obviously around well before I was, but so I like to give credit where credit is due. But I seen a video. I'm like, man, how am I going to come out of this? Like, poster child for step parenting all over the world picture that people have of me, I guess. But I seen this video of this Hispanic dude on, and I don't know, he had tattoos all over his face, like gang tattoos and shit. And it's after we put the girl version out, and this little girl walks in the frame while the song, and this dude is just weeping. And I was like, man, it don't matter. It's like, it don't matter how rough your upbringing was or where you're from, what kind of life you live now. There's people in all different walks of life and from all different cultures and rural and urban backgrounds that have a child in their life that might not be their blood, but they love them. And that love showed in that video. And I don't know, there was just something about that specific video that really helped me out with moving forward. Now, like I said, it's definitely been a hill to climb though, you know? And, but I think like with Pill, we just put
so
Pill,
good, by the way. I love it. It's so good.
That song definitely, like, for me, it kind of lives in the same vein as My Boy, but also, like, lets people know. Because if anybody's heard that song,
you just put it out recently, right?
Yeah, it's just a couple weeks ago. And they might not know that, like, that's me. Like, that guy in the first verse is me. And the girl in the second verse was a girl I was dating at the time that I'd kind of drug into that lifestyle. And I was a piece of shit, man. Like, I wasn't doing anything in my early 20s, but just smelling everything I could, smoking everything I could, drinking everything I could, and, you know, running around.
Dude, same. I was explaining to somebody yesterday about this. If you'd have known me from the age of 18 to 23 until my daughter was born, I was a piece of shit. Like, I was a piece of shit.
Dude, I had no, like, I did not care about anything, but right now, then, and I guess that's probably where a lot of people are that age, right? Like, the thing was, is I just came out of high school where I was never in like a lot of bad trouble or anything, but I was just, I was always into some shit. And then I get out of that, and then I go straight into the God got a hold of me, man. And I was like, I started preaching, and I was preaching for like 2 years in like old fashioned Southern Baptist religion and hellfire and brimstone stuff, you know? And so I was doing that, but I felt like a caged animal, and I felt like I was just regurgitating stuff that I heard my whole life and didn't really know if I really even believed all of it. So then I'm one extreme or the other. So I left that and went straight into partying, drugs, alcohol, all this stuff. And then, you know, getting back to my boy, that lasted 5 years of my life. And then I met my now wife of 10, 11 years, Mandy, and she had the little boy, you know, and so that just turned my life around. So it was a very important part of my story that I felt like I needed. And I don't know how you believe me, man, but I feel like one day we were talking about trying to pitch that song to Luke Bryan because, you know, Luke is having to, he's raising his, I wouldn't say having to, but yeah. Luke is raising his family members' kids. And I was like, there were some people that wanted me to pitch it, and I was like, I'll pitch it, but only if somebody that can relate to the song is going to sing it, because it needs to be real, you know. And I was walking to I got out of my Lincoln Town car, slammed the door, walked up to my door of my rent house, and as I grabbed the doorknob, it was like God said to me, you know, in the way that God speaks, you know, I don't actually hear a voice.
I know exactly what you're talking about, brother.
But he was like, so I'm going to give you this song, because I'd always said the song was a gift. So he's like, I'm going to give you the song you call a gift, and you're just going to give it away. And I was like, oh, man, it's like that. So, I just trudged on, and, you know, John Loba came across it, who is the head of BMG Broken Bow in Nashville. And he had a stepson who's a close friend of mine, and he related to it. And, you know, we were off to the races.
Yeah, dude, that's one of those. Luke Bryan might have sounded good singing it. I ain't got nothing in the world against Luke. He's a good dude. But some people are just supposed to sing stuff like that. If you wrote it, if you lived it, you're supposed to be the one who sings it to me.
Yeah.
Or you have to be so relatable to it. Like, it's got to be word for word to where you feel what the person who actually wrote it, even if you're the one covering it. I always tell folks, you know, if you want a great example of why you don't let somebody cover something like that, I love Morgan Wallen, don't get me wrong, but I'm a huge Jason Isbell fan. And if you go listen to Cover Me Up when Isbell does it, and he talks about living it and everything, and then you listen to Morgan do it, it went from a romantic song to his wife for saving his life to all of a sudden, it's a damn panty dropper when Morgan does, and it's not meant to be. It's not meant to be that. It's like not
Morgan
at all.
Panty dropper.
Dude, this dude could just put. He could sing a song about shit, and it probably come out clean.
Yeah, man, it would. That dude is. He does have a great voice. I watched a video of him. I bounced around a little bit, but Squirrel. I watched a video of him doing this show at the Ryman back. I think it was before all the controversy, you know.
Yeah.
And he was doing Cover Me Up, and I was just like, God dang, this dude can sing his ass off. I love singers, man.
Oh, me too.
I just, like, and I don't know, I guess I'm attracted to a certain kind of voice, and those voices for me have always had grit, you know.
I like the ones you can feel the pain in their voice. Like, you can, you know that they're hurting. And you don't know what they're hurting from, but you know they're fucking hurting right now.
Yeah, man. I mean, my first two, and my top two singers are John Fogerty and Steve Earle. And
oh,
I just,
hell yeah.
I could just hear, like, when I heard those guys sing a song, I was like, damn, these guys are living it. But I learned because I've got to know Steve a little bit over the last few years, and I kind of learned that he didn't really live all the stuff. At first, that really disappointed the shit out of me. Like, I was like, oh, no, man, you're my guy. Good old boy getting tough shit. I used to drop that with my daddy, right? The semi-truck, you know. And that was like, that's what made me feel like you knew who I am, you know. And he's like, and then there's this song Someday that I really, really love as well. Someday I'm finally going to let go because I know there's better way. I want to know what's over that rainbow. I want to get out of here someday, you know. And I felt that shit when I was growing up in Grayson County, Kentucky. And I talked to him. And I was telling him about this. And he's like, "That ain't me," you know. I said, "Oh damn, man, what do you mean?
Yeah,
that ain't me." He's like, he said, "Well, someday in particular, you know, we were having some van trouble, and we stopped. we stopped at this gas station that was closed down, but there was this young cat in there working on this old 67 Chevy. You know, it says, I got a 67 Chevy. She's low and sleek and black. One day I'll put her on that interstate and never look back. And he said, kid came out there and like turned the pumps back on for us and let us get some gas and helped us get back on the road, fix a tire or some shit. He said, as we were leaving, I started thinking about that kid. And I was like, I wonder what it's like to be him, you know? I was like, oh, well, shit, okay. But newfound respect now, you know?
Yeah.
The voice, and it's like, and I've learned to appreciate people like Steve. Steve travels all over the world and like lives with these people and writes like The Ghosts of West Virginia, where he went and stayed with those people for forever and learned about those families that lost those loved ones in the coal mine accident. And wrote this whole project around Jerusalem, which is touches on what's going on right now over in Israel. He went over and made an album with some people over in Israel. And so, yeah, it's just I found a newfound respect for like trying to see things from someone else's perspective. And I don't think that Steve like politically would agree with a lot of the characters in his songs, right? But he Probably. Still feels the need to express their side of the story. So I kind of applied that in this new stuff. But John Fogerty, he came from like, he grew up listening to like a lot of these black funk and soul groups, you know, and really learned his thing from them and how to sing from them. And you could just really hear that in his voice. And so it's just those singers and those gritty voices and, you know, those two and the Temptations were like three. Those were my three when I was a kid growing up. That movie that came out, The Fighting Temptations, I seen that shit and I was like, it was tragic but amazing. And and the voices and the swagger that those guys had.
Motown had it, dude. I don't care if you're 100 years old and you're Caucasian, you're 100 years old, you're African American, or you're 10 years old, you're either one of those things. You hear some of that Motown soul, and it's going to make you sway. It's going to make you bob your head. It's so good.
Yeah, man. It's been a huge influence in a lot of music over the years, obviously. I just wonder if we're ever going to – it's so rare to hear a sound come out these days that's, like, completely original, you know?
It's hard.
What is it?
I said it's real hard. You have to find – a person who's not just trying to make it in music, but trying to be an artist, like a Sturgill Simpson. Sturgill kind of does his shit his own way and is unapologetic about it. Marcus King, you know, folks like that, you know, that nobody does this shit. I shouldn't say nobody does it because they love it, but there is a job. You have to make money at some point in time. You got to be like, okay, I gotta get that mailbox money rolling in. I got to do this song right now. So I've got something on. Like sometimes you got to do shit you don't want to do because you're paying the bills. It's a job, regardless how you look at it. But there are some people who are just like, fuck it. If I don't get paid, I don't get paid. I'm putting this out. And I kind of respect it. But at the same time, it's like, I don't want to be broke, bro.
I definitely feel that. I became a little more fuck it later in the game.
Yeah.
You know, my first record was like super authentic to me. I didn't have to argue with anybody about putting that music out. I was 100% creative freedom. It was awesome. And it was like, I tried specifically throughout that record to pay homage to people like Bruce and Fogerty and Steve and like all of my early influence, Lynyrd Skynyrd and all that stuff and 90s country. And I wanted to like hear a blend of those sounds in that record. But like also, I was on this mission to prove that I could do a record cheaper than anyone and more authentic and, you know, just like a kind of a live sound, but it would still blow up and just like take over the airwaves. Right. That was like that was what was in my head. And then, surprise, motherfucker.
Yeah. That's what happens. Hey, trust me.
We had one blow up and I was super proud it did, but you know, what is it?
I was going to say, but what's funny about that is one of my buddies, Bobby Pinson,
Bobby, like I just seen last week. Yeah,
God,
man.
I love fucking Bobby. We recorded a show last year with him at Seagale whenever he released The Shave. And he released it on here first before it came out on anywhere else, right? And he told me something, and I'd never thought about it before. And I think it applies to you with That's My Boy and the other stuff you have coming out now. He says, to get really noticed, and it's kind of aggravating, but you got to write one great song before you write a lot of good ones. And
yeah.
And he's like, that's the only way you're ever going to get noticed by everybody. And it's kind of, and it was crazy. Is Jason Michael Carroll was on a couple months ago, and he said the same thing. He said, I was out there killing it and doing my own thing, but then I dropped A List of Lies, and it was like the second I dropped A List of Lies, whole life changed. And I think, like, with you, dude, I've listened to the one, The Hard Pill to Swallow, and some other stuff in just the past couple days, and I already had The Hard Pill to Swallow, but I think you already got your great song, and now everything else you put out, you can almost probably do what you want. It's just getting it to people to listen is the problem sometimes.
Yeah, and getting the money to cooperate with it. Yeah. You know, I feel much more related to indie artists and yeah. their struggle and stuff. And you know, I was listening to some guy bitch about people selling out and, you know, record labels and all this stuff. And it's like, bro, like it annoyed the shit out of me because, you know, this project that we just finished recording, I literally had to make a respectful phone call to someone at the label. And cause the answer was no. It was like, hey, we're not going to do this music, you know? And I was like, well, look, I believe in this music, you know? So this is the music I'm going to do. I'm not going on a wild goose chase and,
yeah.
you know, going down rabbit holes and shit. Like, this is it. And like, respectfully, if you can't get the rest of the team to agree on that, then, you know, I'll go back and cut trees for my father-in-law, or I'll go drive a truck with my dad, my brother. Like, I get to do this. I don't have to. So it's like, when I heard this dude talking about, and I ain't going to say no names, but just bitching about selling out and getting a record deal and all this. Dude, I was so green when I came. I was only in town for a few years when I got my record deal. I had no, it's like all this shit's getting thrown at you. I was like, hell, this is the dream. This is what you grow up, you know, dreaming of happening. And I'm going to take it. But like, to put a blanket statement on artists that have record deals saying that they're sellouts, like, kiss my ass, dude. You don't know what I go through in the 3 hours back and forth to home where my wife and my kids are, and being away from them to try to make this work and be honest and try to tell stories that I think are important about the American people and the human condition. And like, so, yeah, I don't know. Just
it's definitely not fucking selling out. It's not. No. It's when you realize you have to have it. Like, I used to think, hey, if you're so talented with the way social media is now, you don't even need Nashville, until I started spending a week out of every month up there working with artists, recording, doing our show and everything up there, and just the networking and all of it that comes along with it. It's not selling out. It's I'm doing what's best for me and my family to get my music heard and to get my shit out there. If you don't have some of those folks, you got to be a lucky son of a bitch like Oliver Anthony, that right time, right song, whatever. You just got to be lucky. And fuck, how many times has that happened? I mean, that's so rare.
Yeah, it's I feel like it's becoming a little more, like, we're seeing it happen more and more with TikTok and all this stuff. And you know, Zach Bryan kind of blew up,
yeah.
not as quick as Oliver Anthony or Chris, whatever his real name is. I just found out it's not even his
name. It's not. It's his granddaddy's name.
Oh, it's his granddaddy's name. That's cool.
His granddaddy's name.
I go by LV Shane because my great grandfather was named LV. My first name's LV. My middle name's Shane, like I said. But
how many times have you been called Elvis?
Oh, dude, all the time.
Yeah.
Like, and I grew up an Elvis fan too. Me and my sister. We would listen to Elvis. We loved Elvis, but at the same time, every time I hear Elvis, I'm like, God dang it, boy! Don't you see the E?
Yeah.
But no, man, I think we're seeing it a lot more. I feel like people. You have moments more than you have like careers building anymore. Yeah. There's like you get your moment, and you better latch onto it, and then hopefully that turns into a career. I found that out the hard way, like. You get a number one, at the radio, you feel like, in my head, it was like private jets, tour buses, crystal parties, and, you know, the finest bourbon there is. And so we come out of a number one, and I booked my first club tour, and we booked 1,000 plus cap rooms, and I look around and they're a quarter of the way full.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, fuck, that ain't how it works. It's like, I got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
But luckily, also was like, I was one of the guys tagging along, you know, in the early Eric Church days, watching him go out and grind and do small shows and stuff. So I just kind of was like, why don't I just build it more grassroots like Eric did, like all the bands that I loved before me did, and just go out and start hustling. So we dumbed it down, and we started, you know, going out and playing smaller rooms, and dude, I love it. And from doing that, I've seen the crowds grow double in some places, triple in some places. But what I'm finally starting to see over the last 6 months is people like singing the words multiple. And so I'm like, all right, it's working. It's slow, but it's working. Everything's moving up. And God, it pisses me off how slow it is sometimes, especially when you've been out here busting your ass and for 8-10 years, and you see, you know, some one song, you know,
covered. Trust me, I bitch about it all the time. I bitch about it. But also too, man, I think you have staying power. I think to where like you're going to build, I mean, you already have people that are coming up now. They're going to build a reputation with bars, with nightclubs, with venues and all this kind of stuff, and with their fans, most importantly, by doing it that way. I think these people, and I'm not saying that Oliver's a one-hit wonder by any means, so I don't want to be misquoted on that shit and be another Mary Morrison.
He's got a few great songs,
man. He's got some ones that I really like. But, like, I think if you do it the way you're doing it, in a way that a lot of other people are doing it, you have staying power to where some of these other folks – you might get a couple songs out there, but what's after that? Now, like, there's a reason why we've had one hit wonders from the beginning of fucking music to where we're at now. And it's, you know, I think it's got to be earned. I think you got to pay your dues when it comes to country music if you want to be around for a long time, or just any music in general.
I think that's what happens to these artists, like Eric was talking about in that recent interview that was kind of popping up all over social media, where he was talking about how there's so many, you know, artists that have had multiple number one hits and they can't even sell out their high school.
Yeah.
You know, those guys, and we all know who, you know, some of them are, and they're just, you know, you get a hit every now and then. It's just something that's easy to listen to. People ain't going to turn it off the radio station. So it stays there, you know, but they have trouble selling out, you know, 2,000 cap rooms, and they got 6 number one hits. And I feel like, you know, I could be way wrong, but I thought, if I continue to do things that way, if I try to just get another number one and start chasing rainbows, then I was building my house on a foundation of sand.
Yeah,
and I wanted to build my house on a foundation of stone, man. I feel like the stone is those fans. So that's why I stay after my shows for 30 minutes to 2.5 hours, sometimes shaking hands and kissing babies, man. I want to meet these kids. I want to meet these people and I've got to learn so much about life outside of, you know, rural Kentucky by doing so, and that therefore I've got to write songs that are inspired by struggle all over America, not just, you know, within Caneyville, Kentucky.
I think a lot of these people, and like I could be wrong, man, but a lot of these people are just chasing that single that's going to get them on country radio, and they forget about the rest of the album. They forget to put their heart and soul and themselves into the rest of the album. And as somebody who worked in radio, who's a fan first above everything else, like I can download an album or buy an album or whatever, and I can listen to it. And if the only thing that's good on that album is the thing that you sent to radio, I'm not going to pay to go to one of your shows just to hear one song. Like I want the rest of the album to be you. And that's why we do this show the way that we do it, is because I want to give the listener the reason why to go listen to your whole catalog and not just your singles, is I want them to know who you are and what to expect from you. And when you do that, it's just, you build lifetime fans, and you build people that are going to support you for forever because they want you. They want you to be a representation of them and get their voice out there, whatever they're going through.
Yeah, man. And I also like, I feel like people from where I come from and the culture I come from is we hear this word empathy like thrown all over the place these days, and it's always directed in you know certain directions. But I feel like, you know, I would probably be considered fairly conservative in a big city and fairly liberal in a small town, you know. So
Yeah.
it's like, but I also want people that, you know, heavily disagree with the culture and knee-jerk reactions and thoughts of people that come from where I come from. I want them to have a little bit of empathy too, to understand like, hey, this is all they know. This is what their parents have told them. This is what they've heard at church. This is what they've learned at school, on the ball field, from their grandparents. You know, you got to understand, you can't just be pissed off and say,
No.
fuck you, I don't agree with that. That's not right. You know, we're trying to progress. Okay, well, cool. Progress is great, but like, you can't just bark at people about it. I asked a question this morning or yesterday on Twitter about this whole issue going on in Israel right now. Because from the outside looking in, man, all I see is a bunch of people on both sides dying, like just over governments disagreeing.
Yeah.
And but one thing that confuses me about it is like the old time American Christianity being so attached to Israel, you know, and the Jewish people of Israel, you know. And my simple question was, where does the foundation of this alliance come from? You know, I thought God's people believed in Christ, you know. And so I was in church every Sunday and every Wednesday, so I think about those things a lot. And not that I wasn't saying I'm with Hamas, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
But
I know what you're talking about.
the first dude on my post, he just starts bitching at me, acting like I'm supporting terrorists. And I was like, no, dude, I'm not even talking about that. I'm just asking a question about this alliance. People just like, they automatically go to bitching at each other, and that's what I'm sick of. Like,
Am too.
I called my friend yesterday, who we generally disagree on things, man. But I'm so glad I have that friend, because I'll call him when I'm stumped. I'll call him and be like, what's your position here? Because this is what I think, and I need to see outside the box right now. You know, I think
Yeah,
it's important to have people in your life. And I think we all do have people in our life. It's just for some reason when we get on the internet, it's just like, you know, we all turn into the freaking 50-year-old in mom and dad's basement, just pissed off at the world.
I know exactly what you mean, dude. I have to deal with every single day working in social media. Every single day I get mad. But it's like this, dude. You said something a while ago that really resonated with me because we were talking about this the other day. What you grew up and how you lived and how I grew up and how I lived, there were a lot of things that were normalized to us that were not normalized to the rest of the world, and vice versa. There's a lot of people that grew up in a big city that was used to doing shit a certain way that don't, well, I could never explain to them what it's like riding farmland or riding dirt roads, having a cold beer, and why it's not a bad thing to do to kind of drink and drive where I'm from. They'll never understand. It's like you're going 95 on a fucking interstate with a bottle of Jack Daniels in your hand. It's like, no, I'm riding farmland. You'll never understand this unless you put yourself in my shoes.
I ain't seen another car for 45 minutes,
No,
man. I'm just slinging gravel dust and having a beer. Yeah, I grew up like that too, man,
yeah,
riding
dude.
around with my dad and his buddies when I was a kid,
Yep.
riding around with my dad and his buddies, like pulling off into no trespassing land and going out and doing donuts in a field somewhere out in the woods and drinking beer and driving off in a pothole and wondering where the beer bottle went, you know?
Yeah, I argued with this dude for 45 minutes the other day because he didn't understand what a trash truck is where we're from. And I was trying to explain. He's like, so you got a whole ass trash truck? And he was thinking about the shit that picks up the big dumpsters. And he was like, that's what you have that you're riding dirt roads and shit in? And I was like, no, we have a truck that is an old beat up Chevrolet that we put trash bags in the back of it. And once a week, we take them some bitches off and we take them off the long way. Where we have a beer, listen to the radio, and all this kind of shit. And the dude didn't understand. And I understood, and it hit me right then that the little things in life that me and you have normalized, nobody will ever get it. They'll never understand why we make the jokes that we make because they never lived our life. And I've had to have it in my head to where I'm not going to get these people anymore either. Like, I'm not going to try to. I'm not going to spend my time trying to make them understand. Or it's even like how you just said with what's going on over there right now. Dude, I 100% would love to find out your point of view that you just said about how you want to see what why it's like it is, right? Because I don't understand the shit. I don't know why it's the way it is, but I'm open-minded enough that I'll listen to both sides of the argument without saying, oh, they're 100% right, without ever hearing the other side. You're just not being closed-minded. And too many people are so scared of what they don't understand that they just close that shit off and they automatically say, oh, no, that's bad. That's bad. It's just so bad. Leave it alone. It's like you don't even fucking understand what it is. How can you call it bad?
Yeah, I ain't been there. You know, I don't really know what's going on. I talked to two people yesterday. I usually don't even get into this shit, honestly, man. Like when Ukraine and Russia happened, I didn't go do a bunch of research and all this stuff. But I guess I'm just getting older. I want to, you know, I'm worried about our boys and our girls having to go over there. You know, I've got a 17-year-old. You know, so these things are becoming realities to me. So I'm trying to learn, man. I want to learn. I'm willing to be wrong. I talked to two people yesterday that have been over there in the last 10 years, you know, so I got to hear, you know, perspective from, and these two people ended up disagreeing on things, you know, but I got to learn a little bit about what it's really like over there, you know, and, you know, when you put walls around cities and shove a certain group of people in those cities with a wall around them and give them less rights, it's easy to radicalize people, you know? And so it's like, I don't know. All I know is I know there's husbands, wives, fathers, mothers, sons, daughters, brothers, sisters, friends that are dying over there on both sides, man. And that is tragic. That's what I give a shit about. I give a shit about people suffering because of bad choices made by government officials. And we see it. We're seeing it here more and more and more every day. These are things that have become important to me. You know, the prison system, the welfare system, the drug abuse and how easy it is to get drugs in America, man. So Stu, you don't need a dealer, bro. I know. I went through my shit. I've been clean against California sober, you know, Cali sober since December of last year.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't go to a drug dealer. I went to a doctor and said, hey, this is our things that are going on with me, you know, and some of it was true, but I also knew that I just wanted something to make me feel better, you know, I left with something to make me feel better.
We live in the country that it shouldn't be called the United States of America. It should be called the United States of greed, from pharmaceutical companies to everything else. Everyone is trying to do and is trying to get their money, and they have figured out the way to make their money is by us, by pushing to us. I don't care who they are. Their agenda is to put more money in their pockets and create customers for life, regardless of what industry it is.
I feel like we've definitely become a nation under God, guns, oil, and drugs.
Yeah,
you know?
No shit.
And man, it's just sad. I hate seeing the people from where I come from, you know, going through the stuff they're going through. I hate seeing the inner city struggles. I see a lot of similarities in inner city struggles and, you know, rural struggles. And I think it all comes down to like lower middle class problems. You know, I was listening to Bruce Springsteen's book because I don't like to listen to books unless the author's reading them, and Bruce is reading Born to Run.
Okay.
It's so cool to hear him tell his story. But he was talking about how, you know, he grew up in New England, and it was, you know, him and I think he's Italian or something, but it's like how the white kids and the black kids all played together in the lower middle class. Yeah. He didn't hear any racial issues or anything until it got to, you know, middle and upper middle class white people, you know.
You probably grew up in the same kind of community I did. We didn't have racism, like because we were all poor kids. Like it didn't matter. Like nobody was like, oh, you're worse off than me because of the color of your skin. It's like, no, we all our lives kind of suck and we were all friends. I didn't realize that there was even shit like that until I started going to other places.
I think I experienced racism, but it was like, there was only a couple of black kids in my school, you know, and I dated one of them, you know, so I experienced it from that side of things, you know, taking my girlfriend to a family event and having a certain family member come up to me, hey man, you know, you know you can't bring her back, right? You know, I'm like, who the hell are you? What's kiss, you know?
Yeah,
no, kiss my ass, I'll bring whoever I want to around. So I experienced it from that way, but it was never like, I don't know. I never seen any like really, really bad stuff. I mean, it's all bad, obviously.
Oh, it absolutely.
There wasn't as much racism just because there was just like, it was predominantly white. There, yeah. You know, it was, there wasn't a lot of people of color in where I grew up.
But even the ones you were around, like even you just said, you dated someone that wasn't of your skin tone. I have too. I went through the same shit. And I don't even think that it's always racism. I think it's just they don't understand. Like, it's a different day and age, and most people are scared of what they don't understand. Now, you do have bigots out there. Don't get me wrong. But most people, like, I think most people get comfortable with it. I think most people where we're from get comfortable with it because we've had to go through all these other things where we're from. So where it's like, oh, this isn't as bad as it was. It's not perfect, but it ain't as bad as it was.
Yeah, but it's also, I think it's also easy for, you know, two white guys to sit here and talk about that and not have a clear understanding, you know what I mean, of what it's like. Like, you know, that only affected me for a moment where I was just like, my ass and went on about my business. Whereas, you know, I know there's people out there that it's just like going in a bathroom and seeing the N-word written over a urinal for no reason. You know, it's like you just put that there to be a dick and to ruin somebody's day.
Yeah. You know, you're always going to have hateful people. Like, it doesn't matter. Not even racist folks. There are just miserable ass hateful fucking people. And we just happen to live in the age where it is exposed more than ever, or out there more than ever, because of social media. So it makes it seem like it's more out there than it's ever been. But I don't think it. I think if anything, I think it's going downhill.
Oh, is it that it makes it seem like it's more out there than it's ever been, or is it that it's been out there and we just weren't as privy to it as are now?
That's what I mean. You know? Yeah, that's what I mean. Is we just there are people now that shouldn't have a fucking phone or a computer so they can spill their bullshit on the internet and say what they want to, but where they didn't used to where they used to just stand in their fucking basement or in their backyard and holler bullshit out. Now they got a fucking platform.
The basement's a lot bigger these days.
Yeah, no shit. It seems like the whole fucking social media world is a basement right about now.
Yeah, it's wild. It is wild out there, man. But, you know, I don't know. I just got back from New York City not too long ago where we filmed a video for Pill. And this is my third time being there. And, man, I love that city. As a small-town Kentucky boy who always grew up hearing that and seeing it on the news that New York is a trash can and it's just evil and you walk down the street you're gonna get stabbed or shot and mugged and robbed. It's like that shit happens every day, I'm sure, there, but it really is a beautiful city and there's such a diverse population, and you every little corner you turn around is like visiting a different country, and I love that. I wish that people that come from where I come from had more of an opportunity to get out and see so much of the United States and the world that I've been blessed to be able to see, and maybe their perspectives would be a little different on things. I know their perspectives would be a little different on things, but you know, I'm always kind of in my head too, just trying to figure out. I used to definitely be the knee-jerk reaction dude, you know, like I've had that hit me in the face so many times at this point. I'm like, I'm trying to always see the other side, you know?
Well, when you're from where places like we're from, little towns, it's so easy to get that little town mindset to where this is the best that the world has to offer. Cause it's all you've ever known. It's all your family's ever known. I still have people to this day, and I'll guarantee you do too, that are like, why is he doing this? Why is he out trying to, what's he got, a podcast? He's working in radio. Like, why does he want to work a 9-to-5? And it's like, just because that's you and that's all you've ever known doesn't mean that's all I want. I don't want to be at the end of my life and be like, damn, I'm sure glad I worked at Walmart for 30 years. I don't. I want to chase my dreams. And even if I fall short, at least I can say I did it and gambled on myself. And people where we're from,
They just don't get that. They don't, and then they don't want to venture out. That's what always drives me nuts. I wanted to venture out. I wanted to see what the rest of the world has to offer, where some people are like, no, I'm going to eat the same three places for the rest of my fucking life, get my hair cut at the same place, buy my clothes at the same. Why? You're not just living to die. You're not just living to die.
I feel like there's some people that are okay with that, but I feel like, man, the majority, I would say 85-90% of people really want what we talk about wanting and what we go after. But as somebody who didn't go after it till I was 27 years old, I also understand how impossible it seems, you know.
Oh yeah.
I like you're to tell this you're story. Right. My daddy, we were driving by this farm at the end of our road one time, and I looked over at that farm. I said, I'm gonna buy that farm one day. And my dad said, yeah, right. I said, yeah, I'm gonna call it Yeah Right Farms too, asshole, you know.
Hell
and
yeah.
So I don't know. It feels like, you know, when you grow up in those places, I feel like you feel like you're growing up in a yeah, right town, you know? Yeah, right. I'm going to be able to chase my dreams and do this. And now I know that, you know, and money's always an issue. Like, how am I going to go to Nashville and write songs and try to build a music career when I got a wife and kids at home and I got to, you know, I got to feed and help support and all this. And it's like, I think if you're honest with yourself about what you're good at, and you go after what you want, do it on as a hobby at first. And then, like, if you focus on what you feel like you're great at and you feel like that you're, you know, God gifted you in, then little angels will show up and, you know, give you some gas money for the journey. And that's kind of what happened with me. I ended up singing in a garage one night at this couple's vacation spot on Lake Cumberland in Kentucky. And I got a phone call 2 weeks later. It's like, hey, we believe in what you're doing and we want to help you. And here's a check for $20,000. Take this and pay your bills with it and start going to Nashville. And I'm like, dude, I'd never seen anything over $1,500 in my hand in my life. Yeah. You know, most of my vehicles cost me $1,500, you know? So I'm like, $20,000. What? I can't take that. I can't take that. And it's like, well, you don't really have a choice. It's yours. It's not ours anymore. We gave it to you. And so, you know, and it, but I think it's also important, like when whether it's $20,000 or $100, like you take that and do everything you can to move in the direction. And dude, I wasted a lot of that money, spending it on stuff I thought that I needed, buying equipment. And I had everything. I could show up in your town, set up a stage and speakers and go to work, you know, without you having anything. And I wasted a lot of that money and time, but it all, you know, I can't say I wasted it because it got me, you know, where I'm at
now.
But also, like, I think it's important to get out and chase those dreams. But also, if you're that person that doesn't really yearn for that, I think it's important to tell young people, especially right now, I'm on this campaign of, like, you know, the hell with college, man.
Yeah,
like, if college is for you and you're academic and you know you'll study and you'll do it, go do it. But the electrician that works on my house makes good money. The plumber that worked on my house makes good money. The carpenter, the roofer, the landscaper, the guy that mowed, they make good money, man. The guy that repairs my car, the body shop, they make good money, man. Like, these kids, I call it the CSI epidemic, you know, when all the CSI movie TV shows came out, everybody's like, I'm going to go to college and be a forensic pathologist. Or a psychologist and make all kinds of money and I'm going to be happy. I'll tell you right now, money does not make you happy.
No.
I got a whole lot of it, but I got more of it than I ever did as a younger man.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you right now that at the peak of my success so far, I was the most miserable I'd been in the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, so
I'm the same way, dude. Like, I grew up without it. I don't need it. It's nice when I have it, but there's just not enough people pushing what you just said. I didn't do no college. I tried to go. I pretended like it for a little bit, but I ain't got no credits. I went and had a good time, to be honest with you. And it's where the person who always owns a business and they're successful, to me, is going to be way more happy and have way more money long-term than somebody that went to college. I think that we got tricked at some age that it was like, you're going to go out of high school and you're going to go straight to college. You're going to get a degree. You're going to have a wife and kids. You're going to have a 3-bedroom house. You're going to have so many youngins. You're going to do this, this, and this, and this. And it's just like literally putting you like cattle's herding. Like they're literally, you're making money for everybody else. You got to pay back the money to the college. You're just literally living life to die. And you're making everybody else happy, but are you truly making yourself happy? And now there's so many different options from anything that comes from social media, any of the jobs that you offer, to, hey, why don't I just start my own business? Why don't I apprentice with somebody for a little while? Why don't I get good at one craft and then do it? How can you tell? I don't know if you're this way. If you'd have told me at 18 years old that I was going to be anything but a Major League Baseball player, I'd have got my fucking heart broke. Why wasn't there people being like, dude, go write music? Like, you love this shit. You like writing poetry. Why don't you do this? And what there was never anybody pushing that shit. I was 28 years old when I started working in radio. And it's like, I spent 10 years of my life thinking I had to do what everybody else wanted me to do. And then finally I was like, fuck it. I'm going after what I want.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with, you know, growing up doing what your daddy did, man.
Oh, no,
there's
absolutely
nothing wrong.
Not.
There's nothing wrong with it. And it's honorable. But man, you get to live one time.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've got an 18-year-old friend. She just moved to Nashville and we started a publishing company and she's writing for us and never had anything wrong with her whole life. She was here for a week, moved up here from Florida, chasing her dream, here for a week and had a stroke at 18 years old.
Yeah.
You know, she's good now. She's good. Yeah. They found some issues going on with her heart. She had a blockage in her carotid artery. Perfectly healthy, it would seem from the outside. But that really got me thinking, man. It's like, damn, I'm 35, you know? And I was like, we don't take care of ourselves. You know? We
not don't. At all.
And even if you do, this is a pretty healthy young girl, you know? And that can happen. So as you get to live one time, so least, like I said, like, do what you're passionate about as a hobby.
Yeah.
Or if you're passionate about carpentry work, try to get a job putting some decking on somebody's back porch, you know, and it's just like, and if you screw up, own up to it, and it might cost you some money to fix your screw up, but go fix it, you know. Yeah. But if you're passionate about being an actor, go to Atlanta, go to LA, go to some, you know, try to get in at Duke, take theater in high school and don't give a shit if anybody picks on you about it. Man, I did chorus classes in school and I got picked on about that shit. You know, and it's like, but now I get to sing for a living, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's just not enough people that, no matter what age, like there's some people that are so deterred from being passionate, like chasing their passion. Like there should be more than that. There's a teacher, a friend of mine, and she just retired. Been around her my whole life, and me and her had that conversation. It's like, I wish there was a class that there's a lot of shit I ain't never going to use again that I learned in the first place. I don't know the shit no more, but there needs to be like a class, something instead of home ec or something like that, to where it's like, hey, let's figure out what you're good at. Like, let's focus on what you love and what you're good at. And let's then see what you could turn that into a career. Like, and let's
focus. You're talking about schooling.
The what?
You're talking about unschooling. So there's unschooling. These programs that have kind of that popped up. And there's a guy named Ben Greenfield, I think is his name. He's got a podcast and stuff. He's been on the Rogan podcast a couple times. But his kids, they go to this small classroom that's like out in the woods, and they take kids out and like squirrel hunt and build stuff. And so I've been trying to apply that with my son right now. He's out of school for the next 3 days. And luckily in Kentucky right now, you can, you know, if you need to, you can pull your kid out of class. They can go on their computer. But I'm like, he works with a golf coach down here in Franklin, Tennessee, and he started playing golf April of last year, and he was like number one seed on his team this year.
That's cool.
You know, so I'm like, okay, I see there could potentially be a future here. He has a lot of natural ability, and he's super athletic, and it's like, this could turn into a dream job. So I think it's more important for you to get your score done because you have to, you know, you need to get an education. But I think it's more important for you to be down here right now working on that scholarship that you want, you know, and working with this trainer for a couple of days other than, you know, just sitting in the classroom and going through the notions. So some people, I have the luxury of being able to do that for my kid, and I understand that. And I wish that more people had the ability to do that. But I think it's really important as parents to be like, to recognize, hey, kids got to go to school. They got to take tests. They got to go through the whole hoo-blah-blah. But if the school's not going to do it, it's on you, man. So find what your kid's passionate about and lean into it, invest in it. If it makes you go broke, which golf could very well fucking do.
Fuck, it will. I play it. I promise. Oh, you got a long road ahead, brother.
I got a tee time with him here in about an hour. And so I'm going to go play. That's something I love about golf, though. It's something me and him can do for years to come. But lean into those things and try to be that person in your kid's life that helps them expand on what they're passionate about and show them that alone will show them that there's a possibility that they can chase their dreams, whether it's being a pro golfer or being the best carpenter in your hometown.
Well, I think too, on the opposite side of that, it's our job as parents. And it should be our job as a whole community to be real with kids. To like, I'm 5'10" on a good day when my back doesn't hurt. Like somebody should have took me aside in high school and said, hey, look, Josh, I know you love baseball. I know you love football. Do not center what you think you're going to do the rest of your life around this. Like, or even on the education side of it. There ain't no way in hell I could have ever been a brain surgeon, a doctor, or whatever. Like there has to be like somebody, like you said earlier, making it to where it's okay for you to be a carpenter, making it okay to you be an electrician. Like we don't need to lie to our kids, and like we shouldn't deter them from pursuing things that they're passionate about. But also to be like, hey man, I saw you writing some poetry the other day. You want to try to put a guitar in your hand? You want to learn how to write a song instead of going out there and getting 5 concussions because you're too small to play against the bigger boys? Like let's find something else and like work towards it. And I bet you end up being passionate. Now, I have not met anybody that's good at something that ends up hating that thing that they're good at.
Never. I definitely get frustrated, you know, personally with the ins and outs of being a artist trying to make it. But I always go back to, I just love to sing, man.
Yeah.
And I get to do that. So, you know, that's great. If I also love to take pictures, and I don't make no money as a photographer, but I do that and I love it, you know, and maybe one day I'll make some money. That'd be cool. But yeah, you got to be careful too. You got to be careful and just make sure that you've thought about it before you talk to them, because that could do one or two things. It could be like, hey, okay, it could make the kid realize, okay, this isn't my strong suit. I need to pursue something else.
Yeah.
Or it could make the kid be like, all right, kiss my ass. I'll show you. And that usually is a good motivator for me. Yeah. I love it. Tell me I can't do shit, you know?
Well, what before we get off here, because I ain't gonna hold you up with a tee time, by the way.
No, you good, baby.
I want you to go play with your son. What's some stuff you got coming out? I know we ran our mouths for like a damn hour. We ain't even talked about like some shit you got coming out or any shows or anything.
It's all good, man. I'm about to go on the road with Cameron Marlowe.
What a beast is he.
Dude, what a great voice, great songs, good human being. So me and Cameron became friends. We went to play a show in Texas. It was supposed to be outside, but there's a bar on the property. And our show got rained out. And they came up and they're like, hey, we're going to cancel the show, guys, due to rain. I looked at Cameron and I said, there's a bar right over there. It ain't fucking raining in the bar. You know, and he's like, no, it ain't. I said, I reckon we could just go play there, couldn't we? And so we go over and play in there. And it's like, so he immediately gained my respect that day, you know. And they needed somebody to come out and open. I love going out and doing acoustic stuff. I went and did some with Blackberry Smoke this year.
Nice.
And I've opened up. I've got the opportunity to the just terrifying opportunities to go out and open for people, for 7,500, 15,000 people, just me and acoustic guitar. And it's definitely humbling, but I love to do it. So I'm going to go out with him and take a couple guys from the band, and we're just going to do like a stripped down acoustic thing. So I'm looking forward to that. Bunch of college towns around the South. So if you want to come see us, come see us. I'm just going to be trying to yell the truth through a microphone for 40 minutes at a time. But then other than that, we just put Pill out. This year we've put out Sympathy for the Devil on Stone Cold Country, Hillbilly with Cadillac 3, Forgotten Man, and then Jonesin', Baptized, Pill now. We're going to stay on Pill for the rest of this year and into a little bit of next year, just because I feel like this song, I wrote that song in the hopes that it would just change one person's life that hears it come on.
It's so good. It's deep, man. It's so deep.
I appreciate it. That song is really important to me. I hope it gets in. I hope it saves at least one life, man, you know? And I know that music can do it, because I was there. I felt my heart flutter a couple times, man. And my dad sent me Homeboy, and woo-hoo. I went home that weekend, man. I was living across the tracks in Bowling Green. I was a thug, man. I was just living a shitty life. And I went home that weekend and went directly into a grain bin shoveling soybeans and corn that summer. And that song is what led me there, and it helped me for a while. But then the record's coming out, Damascus, next year. Probably springtime. Damascus is just after that first record, I was like, what the hell do I do now? I guess I'm on this road to Damascus. But I didn't want it to be like the first record at all. So I started leaning into more of my influences, like Foo Fighters and Mac Miller and Eminem and funk and all this other stuff that I didn't touch on in the first record. And I was saying, well, Damascus is also a type of steel where you take all these different types of steel and heat them up and beat them together. It makes this beautiful blade with all these lines, and it's real strong. And I was like, hopefully I can make this next record a sword made out of Damascus, you know? And that's the opportunity that I get to really explore anything sonically that I want and topic wise, because it's the whole point of the record, is just pull from everything. And there's a song I wrote on there about a friend of mine who's serving hard time for killing a man. And he was my very first friend as a child. And, you know, this guy came in on him with a gun, and my friend shot and killed him, but he was a felon in possession of a firearm. Ooh. So he couldn't claim self-defense, allegedly, you know.
Yeah.
And I just wondered one day what it was like to be that guy in his shoes. And I closed my eyes and just started trying to picture myself sitting in that cell talking to myself and talking to God. And I got to sing that song at Lee Adjustment Center in Eastern Kentucky a couple weeks back for 65 inmates serving hard time. And I could just tell that I gained a lot of those guys' respect, and they gained a lot of my respect too. And I just seen a lot of faces like mine and yours, man, that just made a mistake. Same mistakes me and you have probably made.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I've been there.
Several mistakes I've made that could have landed my ass in there for many years. And I didn't see much difference. So I'm just trying to touch on, you know, it all comes back to Forgotten Man for me, man. It's like, not only that song's very much about the working man, but it's just a forgotten demographic of people all over America, and people that not just that I would agree with on every single topic, but you know, the things that I disagree with, everything. I want to touch on those things in this record. So keep your ears and eyes out for that for me, please.
Well, it's obvious that you're real and you're just singing about real life and what you know. I mean, that's all you could ever ask from an artist, dude. Like, I always say, like, I don't think Johnny Paycheck or David Allen Coe or any of those old guys, I don't think they ever stopped a minute and said, man, I'm not going to write this because it might hurt somebody's feelings. They probably were like, this is real life. There's somebody right now that is living this if I'm feeling this way, and I'm going to put it out. And I feel like that's what you do. I feel like exactly what you do.
Yeah, I'm trying, man. I grew up, I knew a lot of people and grew up around a lot of people in the meth game in the early 2000s, late 90s. I wrote this song called Appalachian Alchemy and put a little bit of it up on the internet. And it's kind of a, to listen to the song, it's almost like a Copperhead Roadish thing, romanticizing the life. But I had these people come on and start commenting, "Hey man, I'm 8 years clean. Hey man, I'm in the struggle right now. Thank you for representing us." And I was like, it doesn't have, you don't have to preach about it. You just have to let people know that you've been there or you've seen it and you relate to it in some way. And they feel like there's somebody out there talking for them. I mean, a prime example of that's Jelly Roll right now.
Oh, absolutely,
you know?
Dude.
I love what that man stands for. And, you know, I just shot him a message the other day. I sent him a video to Peel, and I was just like, dude, I want to let you know that we give a shit about the same people, you know? And I really see him giving a shit about those people. So, would I love for as many people to be listening to my music as him? Hell yeah.
Who the fuck wouldn't?
Well, I'm just going to keep on doing my thing, man. I appreciate you having me on here.
Anytime, dude. You keep doing shit like you're doing right now, and you can come back, hang out with me anytime, especially in person. We need to get you on one of our, like, we got an end of the year round with like Ashland Craft, Bobby Pinson, Brett Cherokee, all them in Nashville, November the 8th. If you're around or whatever, come to Live Oak, dude, and I'll put you headlining with the rest of them. But what we do, our studio even stands for, is called Raising Grace. My daughter's name's Gracie. She's 12. But it also stands for somewhere between Raising Hell and Amazing Grace. And I'm all about growth and forgiveness and taking the worst shit in your life and turning it into the best thing that's ever worked for you. Because I think that God allows us to go through hell so we know what heaven is worth. If you ain't gone all through all the shit you've been through, or me, we wouldn't be in the shoes we've been, that we're in now. We're supposed to glorify that in my mind. So I love having folks like you around, and because you're real. Yeah, I mean, it's 100%. Like, you, don't get me wrong, I've got to have sometimes the sparkly glitter bitches and guys on here or whatever that's gonna talk about shit I don't like. But it's things like this. That when even I've had a suicide attempt when I was back in 2010, and we do a lot of mental health stuff, and we do stuff with Creative Vets up in Nashville, Mission 22, all kind of stuff. And it's the real people like you that make a difference in somebody's life, even if it is just that one person. But I imagine it's a lot more with your platform and as good as you are. Dude, that's what it's meant for. That's why we're supposed to be living.
Hey, turns out November 8th is the CMAs, and they forgot to send me an invite. So, looks like I'm here, baby.
Well, hey, I'll put you down, dude. We'll exchange numbers when we get them recorded so nobody gets them. But, yeah, I'd love for you to come and do
867-5309.
There you go. you had to be an 80s baby to get that joke, folks. Well, dude, I appreciate it. Drop your social media handles real fast, and we'll get the hell out of here.
I believe everything is just at LV Shane Music. So if it's got a blue check mark, then it's me. I only say that not because I'm super proud of blue check mark, but just because there's assholes out there that will try to steal your money. And I know there's been a couple old ladies in the last couple of years that have sent some money, and I'm just like, it ain't me, honey. You know, so
I can't do shit about it.
Check out everything. I would love to see socials grow a little bit. If you go follow me, then people that follow you are liable to see some stuff that we put out. And I just, you know, I'm trying to talk about stuff that I feel like is important in our communities in my music, and it might not all be radio hits or any of it radio hits.
The best songs are not on radio.
I just you know, it would be great to, you know, it's awesome. The paycheck's nice, whatever, but I don't care. I just want people to realize that I'm out here and I'm just trying to tell the truth as loud as I can, man. So,
dude, well, I appreciate it, man. And anything we could ever do for you here, you let us know, brother.
I appreciate you, buddy.
All right, folks. Well, thank y'all for listening to the Josh Terry Podcast. I will holler at y'all later.